This is 1A, introducing your host, Sasha Ann Simons.
That voice might sound familiar to anyone who spent time in an arcade in the 90s. It's the same one from the popular game NBA Jam, which earned more than $1 billion in quarters in its first year.
Oh, he's heating up!
That game coined the terms that came to mean being unstoppable. When every shot you take, you make.
Just Pippen for two, he's on fire!
Basketball players are slightly more likely to make a shot if they made the one before. But does being on fire happen off the court, or is it a trick of the mind, a human instinct to find patterns where there are none? Later on in the show, we'll meet the creator of NBA Jam. But first,
joining us from his apartment in New York City is Ben Cohen.
Ben covers the NBA for the Wall Street Journal and is the author of Hot Hand, The Mystery and Science of Streaks. Ben, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me. That is by far the best introduction I have ever gotten.
Oh, wow. That was incredible. Ben, researchers have looked for evidence of a so-called hot hand. Can you tell us what they found?
Well, this is something that they have been studying for about 35 years. Years now.
And it's been a debate within the science world, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are really smart people on both sides of this debate. I mean, the whole thing really started in 1985 with the publication of this classic paper. And what made it classic was the highly counterintuitive conclusion, which is that there is no such thing as the hot hand. Now, something amazing happened once this paper was published. It was so unbelievable that many people just simply refused to believe it. There were brilliant scholars behind this paper. However, we had all felt the hot hand and we had all seen the hot hand for ourselves. And so we just refused to believe this thing that these brilliant genius scholars were telling us was true. Now, something has changed recently, and this is why I wrote this book, which is that we have new data and new evidence and new ways of thinking that has kind of changed our minds a little bit. It suggests that intuition may have been right on this one and that there really might be such a thing as the hot hand in certain environments.
So it wasn't a thing, but now it is, and it's just back and forth. Here's a message that Richard in Michigan left in our voicemail inbox.
16 years ago, I had the honor of playing 18 holes of golf with the great Arnold Palmer in front of a gallery of his devoted fans. At one point, late in the round, Mr. Palmer asked me what my golf handicap was. I told him I was a 7 at Detroit Golf Club. He looked me straight in the eyes. I can still hear his voice, which to a golfer sounds like the voice of God. All he said was, "You can go low." The next day, I went to my home club, and hearing his voice ringing in my ears, I shot par after par after birdie after par. My final score was 69, far lower than I had ever shot before and lower than I've ever shot since. That's what I know was my greatest streak. I know why it happened, and I'm relatively certain I'll never hear that voice as clearly again.
Thanks for that message, Richard. He described the experience of being on a streak while playing golf. Have there been studies into whether the hot hand exists in sports besides basketball, Ben? What comes to mind immediately is like baseball or softball when a pitcher gets hot, for example.
Well, for sure. I mean, baseball, basketball, hockey. It turns out that if there is any game that can be considered a sport, the chances are it's probably been studied for evidence of the hot hand. I mean, all the way to like horseshoes and darts and bowling. I mean, scholars have really looked for the hot hand wherever there is data in sports. Now, to me, the most interesting thing about that really fascinating message is that Richard knows why his streak happened. Like, that's really odd. In fact, this is one of the questions that I had, and I took it to no less than the greatest shooter in the history of the planet, Stephen Curry.
Yes, I knew it.
And I said, no one gets hotter than you do.
Yes.
And your career has been defined by these streaks. Do you know when you are going to get hot? And what he said, what even Steph Curry believes, is that he doesn't know when it's going to happen or why or how or where. But once it does happen, you have to embrace it. So Richard has something on Stephen Curry, which is kind of great.
Yeah. Then you're a big Stephen Curry fan, right? Tell us about sort of some of the interactions you've had with him as far as, you know, trying to figure this out, right?
Yeah, well, I wanted to find out what he thinks of as the hottest game of his life. And what he says is that it was a game in Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks in February 2013. Mm. He scored 54 points. He made 11 of his 13 three-pointers. It's still the most points he scored in a game to this day, even though he's won three championships and two NBA Most Valuable Player awards since then. This was the game that changed his life, and it changed the fate of the Golden State Warriors. And in many ways, it changed the future of the entire NBA. The oddest thing about this game, though, is how it started. The night before, Stephen Curry's team had gotten into a fight. He was fined $35,000 instead of being suspended for this game. Never has anyone been so fortunate to lose so much money. Now, even getting to the arena on this day was strange. Steph Curry always takes the second bus from the Warriors team hotel to the arena. On this day, for some reason he can't remember, he missed the second bus and he took the third bus. And what happens when the third bus pulls out of the team hotel? It gets pulled over by New York City cops on the way to Madison Square Garden. So he's poorer, he's late, he has to rush his warm-up routine. There, if you were to ask him like 5 minutes before tip-off, is this going to be a good game, let alone the greatest game of his career, he probably would have said no. And yet it was. And I think that just goes to show that like you don't know when it's going to happen, but once it does, you kind of have to do everything in your power to take advantage.
That is incredible. What about outside of sports, Ben? Have you looked into streaks in other aspects of life?
Oh, yes. I mean, everywhere. Writing, music. I mean, I think this is the reason why these economists and psychologists have spent so much of their precious time looking at the hot hand, because this is not just about basketball. This is really about human behavior. And it's really fundamentally about how we make decisions and how we make judgments. That's why these psychologists were looking at it. So in the book, I write about The Princess Bride and how the hot hand is what was behind Rob Reiner's movie. And even like Shakespeare and how the plague was kind of his secret weapon in allowing him to write King Lear, Macbeth, and Antony and Cleopatra. I mean, it is sort of everywhere. I think it's this universal phenomenon that all of us can relate to, even if, like me, we are terrible at basketball ourselves.
Right, and me. I'll join you on that. love the game, but man, I can't barely dribble a ball. Let's unpack, Ben, some listener comments here. A 1A Text Club listener says, having had a very successful career in sales, I have had many streaks. I could usually attribute them to having done the work ahead of time to reap all of the rewards at once. Also, learning how to meditate and visualizing what I want as being very helpful to having streaks. What do you say to that?
I think putting in the work is a really interesting way of thinking about it. I like to think of the hot hand as when talent meets circumstance with a little bit of luck thrown in. And I think we all sort of know that the only way to create some of that luck and to put ourselves in the position to take advantage is to put the hard work in. So like Steph Curry, to take this back to basketball,
yes,
the only reason he was in Madison Square Garden in the first place is because he spent an entire summer when he was in high school remaking his shot. And that shot would become the deadliest weapon in the NBA. But he put in those thousands, maybe millions of hours of work to get to that point where he could capitalize. So I think that's completely right.
And you mentioned writing earlier. We asked listeners what it's like to be in the zone. And one of them said to us, I'm on a roll right now writing a novel. Biggest thing is I don't want to do much of anything else. It's so much fun. The challenges in creativity have evaporated. Editing is blissful.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard editing be referred to as blissful. I mean, I wish I had the hot hand when writing this book. It would have been a lot easier.
Well, speaking of that, how long did it take you?
Oh, I mean, it took a few years, but there are plenty of times, I think, when, there is that short-term momentum and it does have those long-term effects. And I think that, like, the person who does have the hot hand in writing, the listener who called in, he will probably remember this for the rest of his life, right? I mean, because what I found is that, like, these stretches, these hot hand periods, they're unforgettable and they define our careers and they are how people think of us.
Another listener writes, it's like an adrenaline rush that you have to keep up. I feel so motivated and like this is what I'm supposed to be achieving every day. When it stops, I feel lost. Sometimes I even become depressed. I try to keep in mind that even if I'm not on a roll, I'm still making progress.
I think it's a really optimistic way of thinking about it. And it is the way to think about it, that like the only thing we do know about the hot hand for sure is that it will run out. It does not last forever. And so we try to bottle that magical feeling. And we try to like, these are the times when you really have to put your head down and work hard. Because when you look back on this period, you will like regret if you don't. So this is what the very few times in my life when I have felt the hot hand writing, I always try to remind myself in those periods, like just work really hard right now because you don't know when it's going to run out, but you do know that it will run out
at some point. Being on a streak may at times feel quantifiable. We talked about that being in the zone. What did you learn about that feeling?
Well, that scholars have been trying to get good data on that feeling for 35 years.
Yeah.
I mean, those numbers are really what is behind this entire scientific field. So that first paper in 1985 was based on the best data available in the NBA. Really, this revolutionary data set that looks primitive now because we know so much more about basketball and really about every industry. And so the reason we think a little bit differently about the hot hand now is because new data came along in like 2014 that is behind one of the papers that has flipped this result on its head. And honestly, we have better data now in 2020 than we did in 2014. And I think that's why this debate is not dying anytime soon, because there will always be better data, not just bigger data and more data, but better data that will allow us to think in new ways about very old problems.
So Ben, we've talked a lot about these streaks, these winning streaks. Why do people get on them? Is it your confidence growing? Like I'm thinking of everything you described, even that story, that wonderful story about Steph Curry. I mean, you got to feel like you're on top of the clouds in that moment, right? Is it your confidence that's just growing, or something else?
Well, clearly there is an aspect of confidence, even if it's just a placebo effect. I mean, you feel like you are going to make your next shot, and that probably does help. I mean, it's better than thinking you're going to miss your next shot. But what I think is really happening here is that resources become available to you when you're hot. You get opportunities that you wouldn't get otherwise. So if we think about it in terms of basketball, Stephen Curry's team calls plays for him, right? His teammates try to get him the ball. Now, basketball is not the greatest example here because there's five players on the court who are trying to not let him shoot. The other team is calling a timeout and they're throwing double teams at him, and it becomes their sole objective to not let Steph Curry shoot. But there's not defense in other industries. So like,
right,
if you're a Hollywood director, if you're someone making movies,
there's not someone out there actively trying to stop you.
In fact, it's the exact opposite,
right?
I mean, you have screenwriters throwing screenplays at you. You have actors who want to work with you. You have producers who want to throw money at you. And so the result of your success is that it actually becomes easier to succeed in some ways. You have leverage and you have this capital, and like that's the time to spend it to do something that maybe you wouldn't be allowed to do otherwise.
Now let's look at the other side of this hot hand concept. A member of the 1A Text Club wrote to us. They said, "I worked in the casino industry. It was wild to see how people are affected by winning or losing. It changes their entire demeanor and they continue to choose to gamble. Working in that industry has solidified for me that I just will not gamble." What do you say to that?
I think that's a very wise decision. I mean, gambling actually has this outsized role in the hot hand literature, because if you walk into a basketball arena and you see Steph Curry make three shots in a row, everybody in the arena thinks he's making a fourth shot. That's the hot hand. But if you walk into a casino and you go to a roulette wheel and you see red three times in a row, what research actually shows is that most people will bet on black the next time. And that's called the gambler's fallacy. For one, we bet on the streak to continue, and the other, we bet on the streak to end. And casinos actually take advantage of this cognitive bias. I mean, when you walk to a roulette wheel, you will see the last 20 numbers. You will see the split of red and black. Mm. All of that information is fundamentally meaningless. It has no effect on what happens with the next spin. These are independent events. However, the casinos know that they want to encourage you to chase patterns, to look for order and chaos, and see things where they may not exist. And this turns out to be a really profitable strategy for those casinos. It's why, like, you know, we all leave Las Vegas making charitable donations to their tourism bureau.
Right, right. Now, this gambler's fallacy, can you tell us the example that you have of the asylum court judges?
Yeah, so this is not just about what happens in a casino. There are real human consequences and big stakes to this because we make decisions under the gambler's fallacy. And if we are prone to those biases, there are real consequences. And so asylum judges, baseball umpires, loan officers, if they are to do something two or three times in a row, they are much less likely to do it for the third or fourth time. They try to even out the streak. So if you are a refugee applying for asylum, what matters is not just the strength of your case, it's when that case is heard. Because if your judge has given asylum to two or three refugees before you, you are much less likely to get asylum for yourself. That's crushing, right? That's not a trivial example of losing some money at a roulette wheel. This is your life that we're talking about here. And so these cognitive biases, they are really powerful, and it's important to be on the lookout for them at all times, I think.
Now, just quickly here, there are other places that we can see these streaks too. We talked about other ways outside of sports, but what about like in farming or investing? Would it be a mistake to think that that streaks in those industries would continue?
I think it would be. I think the more important thing to do there is to trust principles instead of chasing patterns. So maybe in investing, that means putting your money into an index fund. If you are a farmer, it's smarter to play the long game and play defense and control what you can control and not think that like one patch of farmland that produced a good soybean yield last year will do it again next year, because fundamentally in farming, you are at the mercy of chance. You don't have control or agency over your own situation. And I think that issue of control is the big one. When we feel that we have control, we think a hot hand is possible. When we recognize that we don't, it is much smarter to not only believe that the hot hand is not possible, but to behave as if we believe in that there is no such thing as the hot hand.
So it's about control.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's the big thing. And you know, Steph Curry has control when he shoots. If you're a farmer, you're at the mercy of the weather and you really don't have much control.
Well, coming up,
welcome to NPR Jam.
Yes, that was the voice from the original 90s arcade game NBA Jam. The first coined the terms heating up and on fire. Gosh, I remember those days. We'll hear the story of the game's creation in just a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Home Instead Senior Care. Bonnie, a Home Instead caregiver, knows that building trust is essential to forging strong relationships with her Home Instead clients.
I seen the ad in the paper and I called, and 3 days after I was hired, I was with my very first client. You've got to have patience in order to be a good caregiver. You've got to build up the trust. I just love it. I couldn't ask for a better job or a better client.
To learn more or to search for available senior care job opportunities with Home Instead Senior Care, visit homeinstead.com.
Do you talk about news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
When the economy goes haywire, Planet Money is here to make sense of it for you. From the big bailouts to the tiny details of a vaccine stockpile.
One of the first things we did was secure a large number of chicken flocks.
So these are like hardworking government chickens?
They are hardworking government chickens.
That's NPR's Planet Money podcast. Listen now.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. This is 1A. We're talking to sports reporter and author Ben Cohen about the science of streaks.
Now joining us, the creator of the arcade game, NBA Jam, Mark Turmel. Boom shakalaka.
Mark joins us from his home in Encinitas, California. Mark, welcome to 1A.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's good to hear Tim's voice calling out.
Is that like a throwback, right?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you. Tim Kitzrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Tim Kitzrow graciously recorded that for us. Thank you, Tim. He's the man behind the voice that says heating up and on fire in the original NBA Jam arcade game, for those who aren't familiar. Mark, can you tell us what do those terms mean in the game?
Sure. Well, as we were developing NBA Jam, It was looking good. It played nicely. But there was something missing. When players were losing at the end of a quarter, they wouldn't pay for the next period of time. They wouldn't put more quarters in. And so we came up with this idea to give the player additional power, some superpower. And it really was linked to, there was an NBA player for the Detroit Pistons named Vinnie Johnson. The Microwave was his nickname. Mm-hmm. And he would come in off the bench and, start hitting shots. And so we wanted to do something that could simulate Vinnie Johnson.
Well, I want to dive in. We're getting lots and lots of engagement from 1A listeners. Let's check out some comments. A member of the 1A Text Club writes, I recently won a local Magic the Gathering tournament without losing a single game. Magic the Gathering is a fantasy card game. After the first few wins, it felt easier to make the right decisions because I was more confident in my plays. I was following my gut instincts. Also, Andrew in Cincinnati, Ohio, Andrew says, as a musician, there are times when everything is going perfectly. The sound is perfect, the crowd is perfect, and the energy is just right. You feel as though nothing could possibly derail this performance. Muscle memory takes over. Some former bandmates and I dubbed this experience zoning. And so that refers to what Ben and I were talking about earlier about being in the zone. Now, Mark, talking about those terms in NBA Jam, heating up and on fire, why the fire references?
Sure. Well, growing up, I was always, kind of a little pyromaniac. Video games, of course, are all about sensory overload. And so connecting fire to this opportunity to power up in the game was kind of a natural connection. And then, of course, adding, the terms, the phrases, heating up and he's on fire,
right,
were really appropriate.
Which, by the way, did you ever think that those would become so popular? They're so commonly used outside of basketball now.
Right. No, never thought about it. But certainly we knew there was something special happening as we began testing the game and saw the players in the arcades reacting to it.
Is the concept of being on a streak an important feature of video games in general?
It is. Players, whether you're in a shooter or a sports game, you want to power up. You want to, have your car have a turbo button. And so it's important to be able to power up. But in NBA Jam, it really took on this more powerful dynamic where it changed the strategy all the time. Players were trying to get on fire, trying to prevent the other player. It's a four-player game, so only one person can be on fire, so you were trying to support your teammate when you felt that he was heating up or mm-hmm. when he was, when he had the hot hand, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. He's hot, so pass him the ball. Pass him the ball, right?
Exactly. It changed the whole dynamic of the game. And the most important thing was that players never felt that they were out of it. They could be down by 10 points, but they know that they've got a player that is heating up. If we can get him one more bucket to be on fire, then we can really come from behind and, pull this game out.
Mm-hmm. Will emails us, Mark. He says, you must examine the case of Jeremy Lin in the NBA and the brief hysterical period known as Linsanity. Do you remember that?
Yes, of course. It was crazy. Night after night, he was on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you experienced being on a streak or on fire, Mark?
Well, even in my business, making games, it's all about ideas. And when you get on a roll, you can definitely sense it. You can feel it. Like, boom, that connects. And then this puzzle piece over here connects. And then this loop over here, connects. And so if you improve here, it affects this and affects this, and then leads to more success for the game. And so you definitely feel at times where you're connecting all the dots. Everything's coming together. Your ideas are really applicable. And so I've definitely felt that. Mm-hmm. And the opposite, felt lulls where you just can't piece things together. Your ideas are not working. So I think that's what heightens your understanding that it's actually occurring.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly thank you for those terms. Like I said, we're still using them. You know, I still consider myself on fire at times. And so thank you for that. We appreciate this throwback to NBA Jam. Mark Turmel is the creator of NBA Jam. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark.
No problem. Thank you.
We will pivot back now to Ben Cohen. Ben, are you there with me?
I'm still here. Awesome. I was enraptured listening to Mark.
You were enraptured. Now, here's an example of how NBA Jam expanded outside of the video game. The college drinking game of beer pong adopted the terms heating up and on fire. That's when someone makes two cups in a row and then three. You visited a beer pong tournament to do some research for your book. Can you explain what happened there? What was that like?
Yes, I did not write about it in the book, but
no.
It was a wonderful experience.
It's not in there? Okay.
It's not in there, but I went to the World Series of Beer Pong because I thought, like, this is a way of thinking about the hot hand that many college kids have. And I did have this thought that, like, when you play beer pong and you keep winning, your brain kind of turns off. And that reminded me of this this word that many people use to describe the hot hand, which is that you feel unconscious, right? Mm. You are in the zone. And so I went to see this in action. And, you know, I think anyone who has played basketball and anyone who has had the pleasure and slight misfortune of playing beer pong would say that they are familiar with this feeling of the hot hand, of feeling like you can't miss.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of other words to describe, you mentioned unconscious. Gordon tweeted to us, he said, what you call a hot hand, writers for centuries have called a muse.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it.
There's another way of thinking about it. Let's take a look at another message here. We have Donald who's tweeted to us. He says, chance favors the prepared mind. I forget who said that, but just working steadily on something, in my case, writing music, there are days of breakthroughs. Also, in the Vedic literature, it says, what you give your attention to grows. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think this sort of reminds me of the Shakespeare example, which is that, like, you just sort of never know when the muse is going to strike or when circumstance is going to present itself for you to take advantage. So in Shakespeare's case, it was the plague. I mean, no one would have ever thought that this disease caused by a flea bite would result in, like, three of the most extraordinary tragedies that we're still reading 400 years later, and yet it did. And that sort of just, it makes me think that, like, we never quite know what circumstance is going to be. All we can do is can control what we can control and then try to capitalize when it does present itself.
We've been talking about winning streaks, Ben, but what about losing streaks? Can you tell us more about what you know about those?
Yes, I mean, those are just as powerful. I think Mark just referred to them as lulls, and
right.
I think that is the perfect way to think about them. I mean, I think what most people will say about a losing streak is sort of the same as that state like when you're between hot streaks, which is that the only way to break them and the only way to get back into a hot streak is to keep going. So there's a statistical physicist at Northwestern University named Dashen Wang who has studied the science of streaks and how creativity works. And what he believes is that the only way, he thinks that our best work comes in bunches. Our creative hits are clustered. And the only way to achieve that sort of hot hand period is to keep going. You never really know if your hot hand period has passed or if it's on the horizon. And what you think of as your hot hand period when you are 25 might not look so hot when you're 50 or 75 and you've had other streaks in your career. So I think ultimately that's a really optimistic message, and it's sort of like an uplifting way to think about how creativity works.
You said that the entire idea of this book in the first place came from the fact that you wrote a series of stories, was it, on this topic, on the hot hand?
Yeah, I wrote two stories for the journal when some of these new papers started to come out about the new ways of thinking about the hot hand.
Well, I know, like, just being a journalist myself, I know that a lot of times when you're engrossed in a particular story, you're writing a particular topic, after a while, especially when you've been writing about it for a while, sometimes you're like, okay, I really want to move on from this now, or I need to sort of remove myself and move on to the next topic. But you had sort of the opposite response in that you were like, oh my God, I want more. There's so much more to unpack. Can you describe that?
Yeah, I wasn't invigorated. I wasn't exhausted. I was kind of invigorated. Yeah. And I think you're totally right. I mean, usually what happens once you are done thinking about a story and reporting a story and then writing a story is that you're
like,
sick of that story.
All right.
You don't want to think about it anymore.
Yes.
The opposite happened with me. The hot hand just stuck with me. And I think it's for the same reason that it has driven people crazy for 35 years. Not only because I have felt it and not only because it's this seductive idea, but I think there's an extraordinary amount of tension in this story. And I think that tension really is what makes good stories. And I just couldn't believe how much tension there was in this fight over a single idea. It was something that we all thought to be true, only to be told that it wasn't, only to realize that maybe it actually was. Mm-hmm. And it was a story with Nobel Prize winners and NBA superstars. I mean, all of this, it was just irresistible to me.
We'll have more with Ben Cohen, author of The Hot Hand, right after this break. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. This is 1A.
Right now, every household in the country is being asked to fill out the U.S. Census. It's the form that helps us determine how voting districts are redrawn, where to build public schools and hospitals, how to spend federal money. So why are some people afraid to fill it out? We're getting into all that this week on NPR's Code Switch podcast.
Back now to our conversation about sports streaks. Ben, before the break, you mentioned stories about Nobel Prize winners. Unpack some of those stories for us. Who else did you include in your book?
Well, the story, I mean, of the first seminal study of the hot hand that was written in 1985 was written by Tom Gilovich and Bob Vallone and the great Amos Tversky, brilliant psychologist. I mean, Amos Tversky, who is better known as the intellectual collaborator and partner of future Nobel Prize winner Danny Kahneman. And what they believed and what the evidence suggested at the time was that the hot hand was nothing more than a figment of our imagination. It was simply seeing patterns in randomness where they don't exist and inventing causes to explain those patterns. And that sort of, I mean, that manifests itself in many ways. And in the book, I write about Spotify and Apple and why they actually had to change their algorithms, their code, with that bias in mind. And so what Spotify realized, what Apple, what's no less than Steve Jobs realized, was that when we listen to music and when we create random playlists, sometimes we hear the same artist twice in a row. Sometimes we even hear the same song twice in a row. That's how randomness works. And yet, that's not how we want randomness to work. And so what both of those companies had to do to satisfy users was they evenly disperse artists over the course of a random playlist. Essentially, what they did was they actually had to make their code less random to feel more random to us. And I think that's just this really beautiful way of thinking about how randomness paralyzes the human mind and how it makes us kind of crazy and think in all types of different ways.
So Ben, is there anything we can do to take advantage of the science behind streaks? In other words, can we make ourselves more likely to get on them?
I think we just have to recognize when they do and don't exist. I mean, both are really important because we don't want to behave as if we do believe in the hot hand when we are investing money or when we are farming sugar beets. I just think like this awareness is critical, and we always have to be looking for the hot hands in our own lives and trying to figure out when that muse might strike and how we could take advantage to elevate our careers and enrich our entire lives.
Yes, so empowering. I think you've excited a lot of our listeners. One final comment I'll squeeze in here. 1A Text Club listener wrote to us, "I was playing Call of Duty Warzone with a lifelong friend. 150 players to start. We finished second place in our first match, third in the next. Finally, in our third attempt, my heart pounded. I became extremely focused. My buddies and I ran with excitement into the winner's circle." That's that feeling, right, Ben?
That is. That sounds like a wonderful little epilogue to this book.
Awesome. Well, Ben Cohen is the author of The Hot Hand, The Mystery and Science of Streaks. He covers the NBA for The Wall Street Journal. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to Tim Kitzrow. You've heard this voice throughout the show. He's the announcer in the game NBA Jam. Before we take off, time for today's act of kindness. Ever since the coronavirus outbreak here in America kicked in, you've been sharing with us and the rest of the country some moments of kindness and generosity in your lives. Today's story is from Vanessa in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yesterday, someone knocked on my door. It was a young couple with their two small children, and they said, "We live around the corner from you." I don't know who they are, and I said, "Could I help you?" And they said, "No, we're here because we would like to know if you need some help. We know that you're isolating in this community, and if you need someone to buy groceries for you or go to the store to get something, we would do it. I luckily have someone in Fort Collins who can help me." But they went door to door. These are people who don't know us. We don't know them. But what a wonderful kindness to show us.
That is incredible. Looking out for our neighbors, that's what we need to be doing at this time. Vanessa, thank you so much for sharing your stories. This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit our website, the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.